You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
On Friday, we had the US non-farm payrolls data for the month of August. People were saying that it weren't particularly good, they were less than expected, but nonetheless, 130,000 new jobs outside of the agricultural sector of the world's largest economy were created. On the telephone now, as always at this time of the month, to analyse the figures is Liston Mainges, independent financial and economic analyst. Liston, I still think 130,000 is a reasonable figure, don't you?
Well, again, seasonally adjusted. We don't know the seasonal adjustment. What were people expecting? You know, these numbers have become horribly spiky in that one month it's down, the next month it's up more than anybody thought. On average, it kind of winds out at about the same sort of number. But again, as you know, I always go back to the tried and trusted Bureau of Labor Statistics in America who produce these numbers. And I've never been able to reconcile the number they come out with what I see in their table A1. But I think it's always instructive to look at table A1 and particularly to get perspective. And I believe in looking at perspective, if we do away with seasonal adjustment factors, goodness knows what they are and how they get them. If we look at this year against last year, so August 2018 to August 2019, and Donald Trump won't bless me for saying this, but the unemployment rate has dropped from 3.9 to 3.8. The number unemployed has dropped by 6.37 million to 6.20 million, so 170,000 jobs were created in 1 year in a population of 256 million. We're not actually talking about huge numbers at all. So it's basically been 1 year of nothingness. Of course, the big one as a number is that it is 3.8 or 3. Whatever number the seasonally adjusted says 3.7. But the point is these numbers below 4 are full employment. Essentially, yes. You know, there are always some people getting unemployed because, you know, jobs get taken out. Companies do have problems. We've heard of a few. And, you know, they're between jobs, and you still get other people who voluntarily give up their job and look for another one. So, you know, round about below 4, it doesn't happen often. I think this is the lowest in 60 years, and it was just below 4 in 2001. It generally doesn't stay there long. But now, again, you say, but this time it's different. And this time it is different because the unusual part is that interest rates are low and falling, and the Fed is panicking or being pressured, I'm not sure which, that we have to keep this growth going. That it's been the longest uninterrupted growth period in history ought to worry people a little bit more, especially those at the top. And, you know, there are people out there, you know, worrying about these things. But let's get back to the jobs a little bit. As I say, the one that intrigues me is the men 20 years and over, because I always think, you know, the 16 to 20-year-olds have the option to go back to college, or, you know, they may take a gap year, or they may just do, you know, a temporary work. But so 20 years and over, you're normally in a job and planning to stay there for quite a bit, and that number is 3.2%. But a year ago, it was 3.3%. So again, all I can tell you is whatever we say is carrying on and going on and more people are getting employed, whether it's 130,000 or 240,000 or 95,000, I think we saw as the lowest, and we hyperventilate over those numbers, but actually the number of unemployed is pretty constant, and I don't see it going any lower.
And exactly, so this is the point now. Because it's not doing anything, do you think it has any influence at all over Fed policy, which is the thing that the market is now obsessed about?
Well, that is the real point. You know, there was a time, which I remember well, you and I discussing, when Janet Yellen said she would not increase interest rates until unemployment went below 5.5%. Now, you must understand, or the listeners must understand, that we were at 10% unemployment as little ago as 2009. Yeah. It was October 2009, to be exact. And it's been almost a steady progression all the way down to this wonderful 3.3. But I'm saying it really cannot go much below that. Could it spike up? Well, goodness knows, it could, but it definitely needs a different mindset from the Fed, and I don't hear that coming. Now, how will it play out is anybody's guess. Now, you get my charts, and I actually said of the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield, you know, I'm very tempted to call the bottom. And if you remember, it was back in 1988 when Henry Kaufman became absolutely famous by saying it was the end of the cycle. And he was right, and he became absolutely famous. Whether all the rest of his calls were as good is a bit debatable. But I'm now saying, and as far as I'm concerned, when you've seen down at the 1.4 level, and we're now at the 1.61 level, you know, this is a dramatic collapse. Well, my goodness me, in percentage terms it may be, but I can't see the difference on a chart between 1.4 and 1.6 when the chart starts at 6 and goes down to naught. You know, these are almost infinitesimal changes. But I do think, you know, one way or the other, I'm getting a message from a number of, call them luminaries, in the United States saying, you know, you can't keep going forever. Trees don't grow to the sky. Bubbles, if you blow them big enough, they burst. And that's even worse than letting the air out slowly. So one way or the other, you know, there's a debate coming through. Of course, it's politics here next year in the sense of a presidential election. And again, you've got to be a brave man to go up against Donnie Trump, both in the Republican Party especially, but as a Democrat, you're going to get shot down in flames one way or another, and you really don't have the tweetability of the President of the United States.
No, you don't. It's a very sad world when you say that the reason that you can't go up against the current president is because you don't, you're not tweet-worthy, which is, it's very, very sad indeed. And just quickly back, we've got about 3 minutes to go, listen, having a look at the South African market, I was speaking to David Shapiro earlier on, and he was talking about the volumes on the JSE and the fact that the Naspers split is occurring this week, and there will be a large chunk of Naspers, which is currently traded on the JSE, moving to Amsterdam. Are you fearful that this will have a meaningful effect?
Oh, I'm not fearful. I'm convinced it will. Why would people buy the Rand when they can deal in Amsterdam? Now, the real test is, of course, going to be the arbitrage between the new Naspers, or the Naspers as it will be later, and a process. And there will be some. But I absolutely agree with David. You know, one way or the other, our volumes will reduce considerably. There is now no need for somebody to take the risk of a Rand and a Rand movement when he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
I've had one of my former colleagues ask me, you know, which should I take? And I said, look, I can't advise you. You're not my client. You might be a friend, and I might give you some ideas. But actually, the law does not permit me to give you advice unless you are a client of mine. But essentially, the debate is between what you've just said. If you go into Europe, the discount should not be present. If you stay here, the discount will probably still be present. And you're really playing that between the two. Given that, again, the South African Naspers will be a little bit more local than it was previously.
Yeah, the process is going to be fascinating this week. Liston Menchies, thanks so much for your analysis. Liston Menchies can be reached at liston@liston.co.za. He's an independent economic and financial analyst. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. To receive Liston's charts and other exclusive content, go to strictlybusinesspodcast.com, scroll to the bottom of the homepage, and subscribe.